This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
I had nearly missed the call over the blare of music in my headphones as I stocked the milk in the freezer section. My mind had been split between trying to stay warm under the artificial cold of the freezer and the song I had blaring through my headphone when I heard it from the ear that I had left free.
David and Matthew to the register. I need David and Matthew to the register.
My coworker's voice hissed over the ancient PA system, blared through an ear-splitting electronic squeal and a cloud of audio snow. I slid my phone out of my pocket, checking the time. 1:23 a.m. I had 4 hours left on shift. The store was usually empty by now. The busiest hours came hours before or after I was on shift. Having little to no customers during most of my hours there, I occupied my time by stocking things emptied over the day, which was why it struck me as odd that I was being called to the register. I could have never imagined what was really waiting for me up there. I doubted there was some overflow of waiting shoppers building up at Chelsea's register, and I had told her only minutes prior that I'd be stocking the perishables. Usually, if someone needed me this late, they'd just walk over and ask. I consider whether or not to finish the task at hand, unsure of whether or not it is best to leave the milk outside of the freezer for what was the undetermined amount of time when I heard the click of approaching footsteps on the linoleum. Chelsea appeared from down one of the aisles. Moving at such a brisk pace, I almost immediately knew something was up. I nodded her way, opening my mouth to ask whether she needed my help at the register could wait until the milk was away. Yet when I saw the look on her face, the words seemed to get stuck in my throat, with a look as though she had just walked in on her own funeral, eyes wide and watery, and she was shaking like a leaf, with such force I was worried for her balance. She stared at me with a thousand-mile stare, as if she had just seen a ghost. She moved so quickly and got so close to me I nearly backed into the freezer in surprise when she brought her mouth to my ear and whispered,
"There's someone at the register."
Her voice unsteady and strained with emotion.
"He won't leave, and there's something very wrong with him."
When she pulled away, I could see the gleam of, I don't know, terror, I suppose, in her eyes. That resolve wavering as a look that was a wide-eyed mix of unease and panic passing across her face. My mind spun at the unusual state of her. Chelsea was as cool-headed as they come. Having moved to our small town from New York, Matt and I had always joked that she was built tougher than the rest of us. And whenever there was an unruly customer to deal with, man or woman, she never failed to handle it. A foreboding chill rippled down my spine. Not from the freezer for once, sending a spasm through me as I considered the customer who would bring Chelsea to tears. Does he have a gun? She shook her head, wiping her eyes and sniffing.
No, he's just standing there and looking at me. And he won't speak or leave, and he keeps making this sound.
"Where's Matt?" I asked. Matt was our coworker, and the third on the late shift with us. He and Chelsea had been dating for a few months, and started working at the Ready Mart as a way to save up for an apartment. He was a funny, cool-headed sort, who perpetually avoided conflict when it came, a perfect yin to her yang. He tended to bounce around the store, like me, doing a little bit of whatever needed doing, though we had a habit for extra-long smoke breaks multiple times a shift.
"He said he was taking the trash out back. You were the first person I found."
It was at that point that I had caught something from the corner of my eye at the far end of the nearest aisle, close to the registers. From out of my peripheral for a moment, I saw someone was leaning past the shelf in a way that hardly made sense balance-wise, concealing all but their upper half, watching us tactlessly. Naturally, my eyes followed. And as I turned my head a bit to peer past Chelsea down the aisle from which she had just arrived, I caught a glimpse of what looked to be a man peering behind the farthest shelf. As soon as my eyes turned to meet him, he disappeared with an almost cartoonish action, ducking down of sight with a jarring quickness. Pins and needles shot along my skin as I stared down the empty hallway. Chelsea followed my gaze, eyes somehow widening further as she spun around to look where I was looking. I felt my heartbeat quicken. Everything about Chelsea's reaction, and the odd, though brief glimpse of the man at the end of the aisle was making me feel like, at the very least, we may be dealing with someone a little off. Still, I saw a little option than to try to see what he wanted or ask him to leave. As distressed as Chelsea was already, I knew I had to do something to avoid a scene, but I didn't want to guarantee an escalation of things. I started down the aisle towards the register. I heard Chelsea gasp, and almost immediately her hand was wrapped around my wrist, drawing me back.
"Don't. He's not right."
Her eyes watered, but she didn't waver. A look of panicked determination on her features as she looked into my eyes. "If he's being a weirdo, I'll just ask him to leave. If he won't, I'll call the cops," I assured, carefully pulling my arm free. "You could stay here or head to the back and get some space if you want." She stared at me for several moments, chewing her lip as she seemed to consider things, before wiping her eyes with the backs of her hand.
"No. I'll go with you. If he gets weird again, I'll just call the cops."
I grimaced slightly, despite myself. It wasn't that I didn't trust her to do as she said, but I had never seen her in such a state before, and worried about what might happen if she continues to be around whoever was up front. Still, I didn't feel we had the time for an argument, and the look in her eye told me it would take one at the very least to dissuade her, so we made our way down the aisle. It's strange. I'd walked that same aisle probably 100 times this month, never once feeling anything at all. But watching the palpable increase in Chelsea's tension as we neared the registers made my stomach sink lower with every step. Suddenly, the bright lights and tan floors of the store began to feel like that of a hospital, with anxiety and urge through me as though we were walking towards the doctor for bad news. As we reached the end of the aisle, I immediately noted the strange sound growing with our approach. It was a persistent clicking, reminiscent at first of the clank of the bicycle gears when you take your feet off the pedals. Chelsea stopped, terror managing to surpass her defenses as she froze just as we approached the registers. She shook her head vigorously, pressing her hands to her ears half-heartedly. The look on my face was likely as quizzical as I felt, and she offered an explanation.
"I'm staying here. I don't like how he looks at me. I'll watch from right here."
I was unnerved, but felt no need to argue, her discomfort obvious. It was unlike her to say the least. Having worked with Chelsea and her boyfriend Matt for over the past few months, I'd come to develop a sort of casual friendship with the two, with them even being the only co-workers I'd actually hung out with outside of work on occasion. In that time, I had known Chelsea to be the type who revelled in the opportunity to put an out-of-line customer in their place, much to Matthew's chagrin. To see her like this was more than a little alarming. The odd click grew louder as I walked out of the aisle. As the line of registers came into view, so did he. In an instant, I was aware of two things. The first was that clicking was coming from him, almost certainly the sound that Chelsea had spoke of. The second was the smell. It was thick and sour, a stench that seemed to permeate the air as I approached, stirring an old memory.
I live down the road from a farm that has a couple of goats notorious for escape. My brothers and I would always delight in finding one roaming our property and making a game of chase it back home. One summer when I was a kid, our neighbors had told us one of the goats, a 3-year-old with a habit for late-night breakouts, hadn't been seen in an unusual amount of time. Around that same time, from the woods near our house, we began to smell an overwhelming stench carried by the breeze that plagued us for a couple of days. It got so bad we wouldn't even play outside. A horrible smell like old meat left in the sun. My oldest brother found the animal's carcass not far past the tree line a few days later. Dad suspected a mountain lion had gotten a hold of it. Whatever the case, I never forgot that smell. The reek of decay now, or some reason, wafting through our convenience store. The chill I felt as I approached made me certain someone somewhere was practically tap dancing over my grave. The man at the register wore a tattered flannel and a pair of dirty jeans that looked to have been worn for months on end without a wash. He stood with his back to me, but I could see that he was swaying, his body rocking from side to side, as though he was struggling to maintain his balance. Despite the black hood he wore, I could see that his head was cocked at an odd angle to the right. "How you doing, sir?" I called using my customer service voice as I crossed the gulf between the register and the aisle. "Can I help you?" I rounded the opposite end of the nearest shelf, offering cheap Easter-themed candies, keeping a distance between the man and myself as I approached. I felt that day's lunch churn about in my gut, as the heavy odor and rot and mildew, damp and overpowering, began to grow unbearable on approach. Its source without question. That sound again. It reminded me vaguely of the strange chittering that my cat made one time as it escaped the house to chase a bird. Though his hoodie was up, obscuring his face, I was certain he had made the sound with his mouth, though how, I wasn't too sure. I sent my gut twisting like a mound of worms, somehow even more disturbing up close. As I rounded the register...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever think about switching insurance companies to see if you could save some cash? Progressive makes it easy. Just drop in some details about yourself and see if you're eligible to save money when you bundle your home and auto policies. The process only takes minutes, and it could mean hundreds more in your pocket. Visit Progressive.com after this episode to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
I got my first view of the man from the front. Jizo. It was a testament to my self-control that I managed to limit the outburst just as a thought. He looked like walking death. His face was a sort of paper-thin and pale I thought reserved for the dead or dying. Yet it appeared almost plastic, shiny, and hollow, in a way that made my skin crawl. It was mask-like, and I couldn't peg why, but it seemed just as though his face didn't fit. Something dark ran down his mouth and chin, and it didn't take much for me to guess what it was. The ragged condition of his lips telling me he had chewed them near into oblivion, which only made those eyes all the more jarring. They were bloodshot, almost all the white replaced by a pale red, and his iris were two pinpools of obsidian, boring through my skull with a glassy yet sinister stare. I shuddered out of mutual disquiet and disgust. He glared at me with those scarlet eyes, as though he was trying to peer into my thoughts. For a moment, I found my words escaping me, a strange primal sort of fear surging through me, under that gaze that felt so entirely inhuman. My heart beat with the painful thrum so loud I could almost hear it, as my throat seemed to go dry, making me stumble over my own words. Can I help you? My words seemed to hang in the air for several long 10 seconds that seemed to grow heavier with each passing moment. Slowly, his head cocked to the side, in an almost reptilian gesture. His eyes never once wavered from my own.
God, that face. It made me want to scream or attack him or run out of the store and never look back. No amount of staring back at him made this horrific visage any more palatable. That sickly pale skin far too unnatural. The sound was coming from his mouth, yet his lips never moved once until the corners wavered, his smile stretching almost imperceptibly. It sounded like he was just making the K sound repeatedly, like a broken record. It wasn't like a stutter, more like he was trying to figure out how his mouth worked, repeating the same sound while staring back at me. The idea that this may be some sort of mental health or drug-related incident was beginning to seem like a sure bet. Can I help you? The cold shiver that sent down my spine made my entire body twitch. And as the man finally spoke, I felt dread begin to seep through my consciousness. He sounded like me. I've heard impressions before. Hell, I got a few of my own I'm known to whip out at parties. This was not that. He literally spoke my words back to me, as if it was a recording. Until that moment, I was certain that as odd as things had been, the man before me was just that. For the first time, it began to occur to me that this may not be the case. "Can I help you?" he repeated back. And again, it was as if I had a delayed echo. "Welcome to Ready Mart," he chirped, now in Chelsea's voice.
"Make him stop! Make him stop!"
Chelsea screamed from where she stood, clamping her hands over her ears, tears running down her face. I couldn't blame her for her reaction. At that moment, I had been struggling to come to grips with what was going on. Some small part of me still praying I'd fallen asleep on shift again, and this was some sort of horrific, vivid nightmare. The man-thing, whatever it was, smiled at that. The first decipherable gesture he had made since entering. His head snapped around, almost a complete 180, turning to face Chelsea, though his body never once wavered, still facing me. His jaw dropped so low and with such suddenness, I was sure it must have been ripped free from the bone.
"Stop! Stop looking at me like that! Stop!"
When he spoke next, a cold splash of realization hit me. And by the look on her face, Chelsea as well.
"Stop! Stop! Leave me the fuck alone! He'll..."
The uncanny reaction of Matthew's voice ended abruptly. Somehow that seemed worse if it had continued. The look on Chelsea's face was unlike anything I'd ever seen outside of a movie. It was a strange blend of life-altering sadness, horror, and unmitigated fury all at once.
It has Matthew's voice.
Her voice shook as she spoke, every emotion on her face present in her words.
"How does he have Matthew's voice?"
So far, it had only been able to mimic us after hearing us, and now, it had just used Matthew's voice. The implication hung overhead like a guillotine. The fact that he still hadn't responded to the PA or come back from his garage run only added fuel to the fire. I did my level best to speak my next words as calmly as I could manage, which wasn't much given the state of things.
"Chelsea?" My voice wavered as I spoke. "Go find Matt and call the police."
Chelsea nodded, but before she could take a step to leave, the thing made a sound. It is unlike anything I had ever heard from a living thing before. The closest thing I could compare it to would be the noise that a car brake makes before an accident or a shriek of some winged dinosaur in a movie. It was long and piercing, the sort of noise that I could feel shaking my eardrums and bones alike, and utterly unlike anything produced by human vocal cords. Chelsea doubled over, clutching her ears. I did the same, but it was too late. The pain in my head worse than any migraine I had ever had.
I felt a sharp pop in my left ear, followed by a tinnitus-like ringing and a long wet trickle along the side of my jaw. The man, or whatever this thing was, extended an arm pointing one abnormally long finger in Chelsea's direction, much to her utter horror. His mouth extended lower and lower and lower, until its lower jaw hung past its collarbone as that god-awful screeching continued. The lights flickered, once, then twice, then a final third time. His ungodly wail came to an end. For a moment, there was nothing but an awful silence, broken only by the continued ringing in my ear and the flicker of the lights. It was the sort of quiet that falls right before a tornado, when everything adopts an unnatural stillness and the air is charged with a foreboding energy. I made eye contact with Chelsea, and I could see that we were both feeling it too. She was gone in an instant, darting off down the aisle towards the back of the store. She must have gotten a few feet or so when that thing let out another one of its horrid cries. The lights flickered off, then on, then off. The darkness remained, thick and suffocating. My heart beat painfully as I strained to hear through the ringing, my sight now all but gone. The first thing I heard was Chelsea cry out in surprise. The next was a sudden clamper of footsteps moving forward. On. I could see again, and the first thing I noted was that the space before me was completely empty. He was gone. Run! I cried, knowing it was neither necessary nor fruitful, but it seemed to be the only effort I could make knowing what was to come. I darted to the register, grabbing the miniature bat Matt had stashed under in case of emergencies, and broke out into a sprint towards the aisle Chelsea had gone down, knowing that likely that's where it was too. Off. Darkness again. Whatever that thing had done to the power, it seemed to be a reoccurring issue. My shoulder collided with one of the shelves in my blindness, wincing as the cold metal managed to cut into my arm through the sleeve of my shirt. Sharp pain radiated through it, but I kept running. Somewhere in the darkness, Chelsea's sudden scream rang out, immediately mixed with another strange cry from that thing. On. I could see again. My heart dropped. I was just in time to watch her face disappear, as she was dragged out of the aisle and out of sight. For the brief second we made eye contact, the unbridled terror in her face was nothing I had ever seen. I ran as fast as I could, unwilling to squander the brief moments of vision, managing to reach the end of the aisle before... off. Ironically, it occurred to me like a light bulb going off in an instant. My phone. Between my nightmarish events and adrenaline of the night, it had somehow escaped my mind completely. I fumbled through my pocket for the device, not even bothering to unlock it as I activated the flashlight. I quickly began to dial 911. The call sounded as though I was making it from a tunnel 600 feet underground, the dispatcher's voice faint and choppy. Yeah, I'm calling from the Ready Mart on North and Stony Creek. My coworker has been attacked. I think my other one may have been... I couldn't bring myself to say killed. Hurt. We need the police immediately. Sir, for online, though the service at the store was never the greatest, I had never experienced this level of disruption, and I knew immediately it was the result of that thing. I wasn't even fully sure if she heard me, and while I knew protocol was to stay on the line, I couldn't afford to stay and talk while that creature had my friend. I ended the call and proceeded after the two. The back of the store was empty. The only thing visible near the end was the rack of milk I had been stocking, a growing pool of water puddled beneath it. It occurred to me that I wasn't sure what that thing was capable of. I had already seen and heard it do the impossible, and would surely risk a physical confrontation pursuing it. Still, it wasn't like we ran a gun store. The selection of potential weapons was limited.
An idea occurred suddenly, tenuous at best, based on logic found in movies and YouTube videos. I moved carefully, heart pounding in my ear, pointing the lighter down each of the aisles as I passed, stopping in a few to gather what I needed. As I slid the cheap can of hairspray into my pocket, already having what else I needed, a muffled cry echoed from somewhere in the store. "Chelsea? Matt?" I called, proceeding again down the back of the store. The sounds of a struggle from somewhere nearby made my ears perk up. "Where is that frickin' turd?" I tried my best to project confidence, sounding more angry and afraid than anything. From one of the aisles beside me, something shifted, and a low hiss carried through the dark. It sounded close. "Chelsea?" I called. I felt like a child walking from my room to the kitchen in the dark, the world around me suddenly full of unseen monsters. There were only a few aisles left. Chelsea and whatever it was that had her were bound to be in one of the next three. My stomach flipped at the realization. The suffocating feeling that I was slowly being closed in on began to take hold. "Hey, David." My heart lurched painfully and I nearly jumped out of my skin as I spun around. I only realized it was Chelsea's voice after the initial shock settled, replaced by an immediate relief to not be faced down by some horrid nightmare creature. "Jeez, oh, you scared the hell out of me," I breathed. As I aimed the light at the end of the aisle, pale and almost reflective with what had to be sweat in the pitch black, she was peering from around the end of the shelf, only her head visible, hair twisted and matted as it curtained either side of her face. "Are you, oh..." The rest of my words caught in a sudden dryness of my throat. Her smile was wide, almost cartoonish, and almost as quickly as it came, the relief faded, replaced by a cold, heavy knot of dread. Her smile, it wasn't right. Neither the context of the appearance. It stretched just about too wide on her face, her eyes oddly bloodshot. It lurched forward in an instant, as if sensing that its charade was broken, giving off something like a hellish mix between a woman's wail and a canine's howl, utterly unnatural. I didn't have a moment to spare. As it crossed the aisle with blinding speed, hands outstretched, ending in bestial claws, I raised the aerosol can, sliding my phone into my pocket and gripping the lighter I always carried, flicking it on as soon as it was out. For those seconds, I was plunged into darkness, the only sounds of the approaching nightmare to greet me. Dear God, let this work. I pressed down on the button as I could feel the cold tips of its claws grazing my skin. A burst of flame spat forth, the heat so intense I nearly stopped. I didn't, however, as its furious cry shifted into a deep screech and the thing reeled away, hands flying to its face. Its head was in a blaze, the sounds it made becoming more strained and airy as fire ate away at it internally. It shook its head like a wounded animal with such ferocity. It slammed into the shelves on either side as it scratched and clawed away at its searing skin. I should have continued. I should have lit that thing from head to toe. But I was caught in a sickening awe at the gruesome sight. The smell, already that of dying things, grew sharp and warm, coating my nose and throat. As the blaze spluttered to a singular flame, then a faint hiss, a strained silence fell over everything. On. The lights clicked back on with a pop, making me jump when it returned. The thing glared at me, one of its eyes a ruined mess in its drooping socket as its face began to melt and peel away like a dolly representation of a human, the other glistening with the pain and hate. The face, its melting mockery of Chelsea's face, drooped with a surreal, paint-like effect. I struggle still to describe what lied beneath. It was like a hyper-realistic depiction of a child drawing of a human face.
a nose that was merely a pair of small holes. Its eyes, two pinpoints in a swollen, rigid skull reminiscent of a pumpkin. Even still, a smile stretched across its charred features. Half of its own small mouth, the other of what remained of its mirage.
Go!
I sputtered, spraying another burst of flame in its direction. It hissed, but didn't step forward. I heard a groan from the aisle beside us. Its singular eye darted to the side, and it cocked its head to the right, listening for something I couldn't hear. It shuddered, chattering angrily before speaking what I thought was its final words to me.
Need David. Go find you, David.
It struggled to put the words together, but made sure its point was clear. And with that, it scurried off, disappearing down the aisles and towards the exit, leaving me frozen in horror and disbelief. The sound of things falling to the ground in the aisle beside me made my heart lurch and reminded me of Chelsea. I hurried over, still clutching my flamethrower as I rounded the shelf. She laid in a heap on the ground, curled up in a half-fetal position. Recognition bloomed through the initial fear in her eyes as she saw me, and she hurried to her feet, rushing forward. Claw marks gouged her face and she shook wildly, but appeared otherwise okay.
Matt, I have to go find Matt.
She hurried past me towards the back door near the dumpsters. I followed, and we hurried through the small stock room and out the back of the store. I didn't see anything at first, but Chelsea cried out and rushed over towards the dumpster where I saw a pair of legs stretched out from behind it.
Matt! Matt, get up, Matt!
My heart dropped as I saw him. The panic in her voice and the utter stillness as well as the look of him making me think the worst. His face was scarred, deep gashes digging through half of it as though he had been mauled. Strange scars patterned his visible skin. My heart dropped. In the distance, an approaching siren blared. Matthew coughed.
Holy crap, I breathed. He's alive!
Chelsea did her best not to let panic override her, still practically hyperventilating as Matt's eyes slowly began to flutter open. Dark blood spurted from his mouth as he slurred his words. His eyes seemed to lock onto me. The sirens grew nearer.
Shh, you're okay, you're okay. Just wait for the ambulance.
He coughed again.
There's a man. You have to. It's fine. We're fine. He's gone.
I could hear faint conversation from within the store, the sirens coming to a halt at the front, the glow of emergency lights lighting up the night. The rest of the night went by in a relative blur. We all spoke to the police, giving our accounts of the night's event, leaving nothing out despite the insanity of it all and the looks it returned. The security footage was a bust. The cameras and corresponding computers all fried somehow when the power went out. A random power surge, they said. I know better. Matthew denied emergency medical, citing a lack of insurance, and Chelsea followed his lead, so after a few hours of questioning by the police and EMTs, had all left the lot. The store was closed for the rest of the night. But given that little was broken after the meager phone call with the manager apologizing for our trauma and offering to temporarily increase all the employee benefits, the matter was considerably resolved.
Let the other two know when you see them. I'm not getting an answer,
he told me, and I agreed, too tired to do otherwise. Despite it all, I returned to work the next day. After all, trauma and sob stories, no matter how reasonable, don't pay the rent. Neither would the employee discounts. I was content and tried to erase the night's events from my mind, acting as if nothing had ever occurred. But recent events have deemed that impossible. You see, I thought nothing of Matthew and Chelsea's absence the rest of that week. Sure, I found it odd how none of my calls to either of them were answered, but we all cope with trauma differently. However, last night, almost a week after the ordeal. I received a call that had made it so I couldn't feel safe to return to work. I didn't feel safe at all. My manager called me before my latest shift. The tone in his voice immediately making my stomach bubbling with an odd sort of anxiety.
"The cops are looking to speak to Chelsea if you've heard from her," he had begun. "Someone found a body in the bog near the store. I'm sorry. I know you guys were close, but it was Matt's."
I felt cold and hollow, as though every ounce of blood had evaporated into an icy mist in my veins.
"They said that he's been there for about a week. I think they suspect maybe she had something to do with it. Brought him back there that night, I don't know. Anyways, you can take some time off."
When the call ended, I sat frozen with the phone to my ear, letting the dial tone blare as my mind raced, his words echoing in my mind with cavernous effect. "He's been there for about a week." I had seen Matt that night. We both had. I watched him and Chelsea drive off that night, like a flashback. My mind replayed the image of that thing and the appearance of Chelsea, peering at me. I'd seen something that looked like Matt, a quiet, mangled version of him at that. My heart pumped panic through me as awful connections began to form. Suddenly, Chelsea and Matthew's complete radio silence made awful sense, and that thing's threat bears new weight. I believe Chelsea is dead now too, unfortunately. Matthew too. I don't think I'll be returning to work for a while, if ever. The paranoia has gotten overwhelming. I see monsters in every shadow, hear approaching death in the creak of every floorboard. Hell, even as I write this in my room, beside the window carrying in the night breeze, I can't help but feel I could smell the faint but growing scent of rot in the air. God help me.